so many different kinds of movies. Not all of them, as you just mentioned, you know, a roaring success, but most of them, certainly. I mean, you know, your track record compared to most directors is supreme. But there were some that didn't work. Do critics, what critics say about your films, do you read it? Do you take it to heart, you know, when you have one?
I don't take anything to heart because, and this is the honest to God's truth, I do read the reviews because you need them to put them quotes in the papers and stuff like that. No, you know, you make an ad of it. So you take the good ones, you know. Every film, every crappy film in the world has great reviews, you know. But the truth is, any film critic is no more or less important than anybody here in the audience or you or me. It's just an opinion. It's just what you think of it, you know. So I've come to learn that film critics don't mean a film is going to be successful or not. It's just another person's opinion. And so, you know, if you have a film that resonates with an audience and an audience is moved by it or they're laughing and they're emotionally taken by it, I mean, Bucket List couldn't have gotten worse reviews. It was the worst reviews I've ever had in my life.
Really?
Oh, yeah, no. The worst reviews I've ever had in my life. And yet, I said, I don't care what they're saying. I know what I've done here. I know when the people sit in that theater, they are moved by it. They're crying, they're laughing at a certain point, and they are moved by it, and they have a profound experience. People come up to me and tell me they've seen it over and over again because it makes them think about their lives and stuff. And I said, so that to me is what's important, you know? And by the same token, the great reviews don't mean anything either. Because, again, that's just that person's opinion, you know? And time goes by, and nobody remembers what got good reviews and what got bad reviews. Things either make its way into the culture or it doesn't. It just kind of does. And I was talking today to a friend who had seen Princess Bride recently and hadn't seen it for, you know, 20 years, whatever. And, wow, it's a great movie and it's great and wow. And I told him about a story. When the picture first came out, nobody knew, we didn't know how to market it. It was a really oddball film. I mean, was it satire? Was it a romance? Was it a fairy tale? Was it a fractured fairy tale? What the heck was it? And we didn't have a trailer. We didn't have a one sheet. We had nothing. And so Barry Diller, who was the head of Fox at the time, I was on the phone screaming with him and saying, you know, because I remembered when The Wizard of Oz came out, it was also not successful, you know, and it was... didn't get well reviewed and it wasn't successful. And I remember screaming at him. I said, Barry, I don't want The Wizard of Oz! And he kept saying, Rob, don't let anybody ever hear you say that. You should be so lucky that The Wizard of Oz. But what I meant was, I don't want a picture that I know people are going to like ultimately to eventually, you know, to not hit the audience. Now, it over time has made its, you know, way into the culture, just as Spinal Tap has over the years, but certainly when Spinal Tap came out, nobody got it. They didn't understand it at all. I mean, people came up to me, you know, when we first screened it in Dallas and said, why would you make a movie about a band that's so bad that nobody's ever even heard of? You know? And then this year I'm watching the U.S. Open and the guy is talking about there's a fine line between stupid and clever. And I'm thinking, he's quoting Spinal Tap, and the guy couldn't be more white bread. He's at the U.S. Open. And so, you know, as time goes by, you know, and it doesn't really matter. My friend Albert Brooks and I, who we used to be roommates, and he used to go on the Carson show all the time. He was always going on the Tonight Show, and he had this routine, and he didn't go to comedy clubs. He didn't try out the routines there. He'd try them out for me, you know, just the two of us. And then I'm going to do this tonight on national television. I said, Albert, don't you want to try it out? See, he came up with this idea. He had an idea where the guy was a mime. And he was a mime. He had a white face. He had the leotards. And he did nothing but talk. All he did was talk. He would go, he says, you see, I'm pulling the rope. There's no rope here, but it's as if there was a rope. See, I'm pulling the rope. Now, look, there's a box, but I'm not really in the box, I'm just pretending. And he talked like this. Now, he went on Carson, he did this routine, and the audience sat there, stone silent. No laughter. It was like death. And I thought, what a brilliant routine. Nobody gets it. Now, Here was my dad was hosting. Now I remember, my dad was hosting the Tonight Show. He was subbing for Johnny Carson, and the thing bombed like crazy. Now a few weeks goes by, and now Carson is back at the job and he's hosting, and they call Albert to do, you know, to come on the Carson Show again. He had been on a number of times. And I said, Albert, what routine are you going to do? And he said, I'm going to do the mind piece. I said, Albert, what are you, crazy? You bombed like crazy with that. He said, but it's funny, Rob. I said, yeah, I know it's funny, but he couldn't get any laughs. I said, yeah, but it's funny. And I said, all right, and he went and did it. Now he started the routine exactly the same. And at first, again, they weren't laughing. But Johnny Carson, who had never seen the routine, starts to laugh and gets hysterical laughing. I mean, he just was convulsed. And I was there. I saw Johnny Carson fall off of his chair. He was laughing so hard. The audience figured out, oh, I see. He's making fun of the mime. And then the audience went. Because Johnny Carson allowed the audience to laugh and said it's okay, see? And then I learned a big lesson from that, which is, if it's good, it eventually will find its audience. You may, you know, if you're Vincent Van Gogh, you may not be around when it happens, and you may have one less ear in the process. But the fact of the matter is, it doesn't matter what critics say at any given point in time. What matters is it connecting with the audience, and will it connect over the years? As years go by, will people still revisit that and say, yeah, that meant something to me, or it reflected something of my life experience?